welcome. This podcast is brought to you by recruitmentcoach.com.
How's business been?
Business is booming. Yeah, business is booming thanks to the basics that you kind of got in place for me. So yeah, I think this month, this week, I think I'll do 100 grand.
So wow, that's a good week.
It's a good, well, I mean, obviously, as you know, there's been a lot of work in the run-up to that, but it just so happens that it's, so I think this quarter I'm on target for 150. So yeah, in a very good place, and lots of meetings coming up, and all kind of, you know, I guess if you really simplify it, you know, two basic things. Number one was working with you on, you know, what's the proposition? You know, why Melrose Partners, and that tied into, you know, the retainer and the search process, et cetera, and even thinking about the SWOT analysis. And then two is just, you know, having the discipline to market for an hour every day.
Well done. And have you kept that up?
Yeah. I've actually eased off a little bit because I've been that busy. That it's, you know, I've got to focus now on, so next quarter really we've got, you know, I'm just looking at them now, realistically there's probably 180, there's 250,000 up for grabs next quarter, so we should get 100 of that. So now it's just about focusing on making sure that actually happens, and, you know, getting the research in place and the right people. And then I'll be back onto the marketing, but you know, I've got, you know, a number of meetings running up to the end of December, and then also in January as well for new business too. I actually, marketing is the bit that I enjoy the most, Mark.
Wow, that's quite a turnaround from when we first met each other.
Yeah. It's a big turnaround.
So can you describe what was like? When we first started working together, how did you feel about marketing?
Just nervous, anxious. The internal self-talk was, you know, why would they work with me? I hope they stay on the line. What am I going to say to him? You know, all these kind of, you know, this internal negative chat, basically. But then, you know, if you know what you're going to talk about and if you're confident about your proposition, and I truly believe, you know, 100% that, you know, the business's proposition is much better than what you would get at Rogers or any of those guys. And that comes across. So it's not like there's no specific script. But the very fact that you're confident about what you know, and that, you know, we worked very much on the proposition, on the search proposition, on, you know, the execution of, you know, how a search is done, then, you know, it could be any point, right? You know, some clients might like the fact that I'm senior. Some clients might like the fact that we can unlock other candidates. Other people don't. Some might like the fact that it's the research. You can't really go in with a prescriptive, you know, say these words and, you know, they're going to say, yeah, here's a retainer for you. I think with one client, actually, which is one of the top 10 hedge funds in the world, we just talked about what makes people successful. He that was his core thing. His core thing when he was meeting with individuals in the process, as I later found out, was it's all about your attitude. And we happened to agree, and I'd read a few books on the subject as well, like Malcolm Gladwell, Outliers.
That's a good one.
It's good, but it's not great. There's a better book called Talent is Overrated by Jeff Colvin, which is much better. And it states the same thing, but in a much, Gladwell's book is more of a beach book for me.
Yeah.
Just quickly go through it. Whereas Colvin gets a bit more scientific. I'll pin you an email if you want to read it. But
yeah, I'd love to.
But same thing, right? 10,000 hours, sustained practice, learning from your mistakes, So that, you know, I won the retainer there. We did a great job on the execution. I wouldn't say it was the quickest mandate, but I mean, it took us 4 or 5 months because we were looking for a certain individual. But overall, he was really happy, and we're having lunch Thursday, actually. And that's one of the biggest hedge funds in the world. And I was just thinking yesterday or this morning, I was just thinking, you know, my client base is some of the top 10 hedge funds and private equity funds in the world.
Wow, that's awesome. It's awesome. Because Bob, when we first started working together, then you had sort of two or three key clients that you're getting most of your revenue from.
Or it was opportunistic as well. Whereas now, I definitely have a client base, I would say. So whereas before, I, you know, maybe there's one or two clients that, you know, that were giving me work for sure. And all of this stemmed from actually something, you know, pretty disastrous. I think maybe we got together after that point. No. We were working together at the time. So it was like Christmas of last year. And then, you know, said they, you know, they were going to go ahead with another firm, kind of said, you know, we've had a shot at this mandate, we're going to go with somebody else. And there was a third firm at the last minute. They literally said to me, we're going to retain you. And then at the last minute, they changed to going to someone else because the other firm had just completed a search in the area. but my mentality's completely changed. It's like, you know, I will continue going at people as long as we're having an open discussion and people, I'm not pestering someone, I will politely pester them, shall we put it that way. You know, if there's a reason to get together, I'll figure one out, basically. Whereas before, I was, you know, before, to be fair, I was very, very comfortable in my comfort zone, and they were the clients that were giving me the money. And I think from a mentality perspective, I was kind of rationalizing why I shouldn't kind of go out there, right? I was scared of going out there, to be frank, because I didn't really know what to say.
Bob, but let's just rewind a little bit, because what's interesting is that at Huxley, you were one of the top billers and you were like a machine, and you had, you know, you had no qualms about marketing back then. So what do you think shifted that when you started up on your own, that then you kind of were more resistant to doing the marketing?
At Huxley, I was the top biller. That's the thing, Mark, right? At Huxley, I was the, at the time that I was there, I broke the record for the amount billed ever. So even the CEO and other guys, you know, other top management. So I had done that. I think what had changed is, frankly, Huxley was a very good learning ground. Mm-hmm. Because they instilled that discipline in you that, you know, you've got to do your hour of marketing or 2 hours of marketing. You've got to, you know, we used to have these lead sheets. So you've got kind of, you know, you don't leave the desk until you finish a lead, you know, you've got a full page of leads. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a fact, right? I mean, if you put in the work, and if you've got good content to talk about, something's going to happen. You know, it might take a while, it may not take, you know, it might take a while, it may come quickly, but something's going to happen. And as you have that machine up and running, and I'm back there now. I remember when we were working together, you said, you know, you were, I think you were diplomatically kind of saying, well, you know, maybe we, you know, maybe do half an hour. You know, I wouldn't drop the marketing altogether. And I took on board and I kept on marketing, and you're right, you know, you'll meet people and things will go really well and they're like, yeah, we want to hire two people or we'll retain you, but things change. So if you want to bill, you know, whatever X amount in whatever time, I think you really have to target twice that, right? So if you want to bill 150 or 200,000 in a quarter, you really have to have a strong pipeline of 400,000 to 500,000, certainly for that way you're going to hit your targets. And what changed was just having the confidence in knowing what I was saying and just starting those, you know, those initial steps of getting on the phone So, you know, it's uncomfortable. You're out of your comfort zone. You are going to make mistakes. But, you know, after a week or two, you know, you'll be fine with it. It'll be second nature to you, right? And plus all of the positive things that happen from it, like getting an interview or getting a meeting. So, you know, I on my whiteboard, I've targeted myself on meetings, new meetings booked with clients, new clients.
Good.
So 2 a week is the target.
Yep.
And that's dropped slightly, but then that forces you, you know, as you look at the whiteboard. So I've got 2 new client meetings booked a week, first interviews, and CVs. And then I just record, you know, how many marketing calls I actually connected with. They are the 4 basic KPIs that I have every day. So it just forces me, which I wasn't doing before, to think, okay, I've got to get some CVs out today. And then that forces you to think, okay, I get out. What can I make happen? You know, who can I call to get a meeting with, right? Maybe I, you know, I know quite a few people who've gone to great firms, but I don't really have any connection. So let me call them and let me ask them if I can get a meeting with, you know, whoever's heading up the recruitment or whatever it might be.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Bob, tell me about this 130,000 pound fee.
I'm laughing because I got a little bit greedy. So basically, I introduced the senior managing director to a boutique M&A house.
Okay.
A learning point here was that I'd sent the terms, I think about 6 times over the last 2 years, you know, every time I introduced someone. So I'd sent the terms with him, and then HR, you know, they met him, they liked him. HR then asked for the terms again. So I sent them again and said, okay, you know, let's meet him again. At which point I thought the terms were accepted. So anyway, he went through the process. Obviously, I knew it was going to be a big fee, and with anything like that, wherever I can, when I know it's going to happen, I try and candidate as possible. You know, coffees, lunches, breakfasts, whatever, just to make sure it's going to happen. Or if it's not going to happen, then understand why and, you know, find somebody else, basically. So all of that happened, and we got really to the final stages, and then HR sent me an email saying, "Oh, we'd like to bring up the fee." And I was like, "Oh, not good." Luckily, one of the senior partners in the firm was my actual contact, and I emailed him and I said, "Look," in fact, I called him and I said, "Look, I don't know if she's, you know." If she this is a bargaining thing or whatever, but if they're chipping away at the fee, this isn't going to happen. He obviously had a word internally and said, oh, well, I don't know what he said, but she came back and said, oh, my mistake. We're fine with the fee, but can we cap it at $300,000, which is roughly 200,000 pounds. I think at the time it was 198,000. But then I pushed for the full fee, which was 33.33% of his total cash compensation, which would have ended up at 240,000. So I emailed her back and pushed for that, and said, you know, the fee state this, blah, blah, blah. To cut a long story short, they said no. Somebody else got on the phone and said, we're only going to pay you, I think it was $100,000.
Oh.
Yeah. And I was like, no way, you know, not a chance in hell. And we ended up agreeing at $200,000, which is 128 or 129,000 pounds. And funny enough, I've got the email yesterday from them just saying, confirming that it had been paid. So a great experience. You know, one of the benefits of that experience was, number one, as a sole, well, not a sole one man band, because I've got a couple of researchers, but as a small company, I suddenly realized that unless you have terms signed, sealed, and delivered, you really don't have a leg to stand on legally.
Right.
And in fact, even if you have terms signed, sealed, and delivered, if the client turns around and says, we're not paying you, It is an incredibly expensive situation. So, to hire, obviously you need to hire a proper law firm, and a letter is about £3,000. So, I kind of explored all of that, right? And then I came to the conclusion, and I said to one of the lawyers, this is all free advice, right? And when I was thinking, hey, I might need you, I said to one of the lawyers, I said, yeah, but, they could know that we're a small company and they could just get their general counsel to write 20 letters.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And down £50,000-£60,000, and we're still at paperwork stage. And they said, yes, that's very true. So that's the reason why I kind of settled for that. Why I agreed to the $200,000, because it's limitless, basically.
You paid $50,000 for an excellent reminder to get terms signed and have it all cleared up front. But still, Bob, still $130,000 is a good, or $28,000, $128,000, whatever it was. That is a nice payday. And if you left it on amicable terms with the client, I mean, would they work with you again? Would you work with them again? Was it left on a positive note, or?
No, I wouldn't work with them again. The COO who came in and at the end was, I mean, just lied and, did everything. Basically, it was shocking. I think I'd introduced six people to them in over two years, and two of them they wanted to offer. Right. Okay. But the way they behaved was just, it just wasn't right.
Fair enough. Yeah.
But you're right. The positives were that 60,000 that I left on the table. That was an extremely valuable lesson in signing up terms straight away. And since then, I've actually signed up about four or five clients on the terms.
Good.
And it's the first thing, pretty much as soon as they're interested in an individual or a profile. And what I've noticed is I've been surprised at how many people have been, we pay full fees. So it's just a bargaining thing when they don't want to see your terms. Mm. And I think people respect the certainty as well that you have.
Yes.
We charge a third of full total comp, and that's it. So, because if you're not charging that, then there must be something wrong.
Right, exactly. That's the perception. If you're too willing to too quick to negotiate, is that you're not worth the fee anyway. So, Bob, how did this whole thing come about? How did you, how did you engineer that big placement?
Oh, so I'd known a senior partner in the M&A boutique at the client for quite some time. He recently moved there. I met him, met him for a coffee. He said, we've got some open spots in certain sectors. We're not going to retain you. They have retained one firm, but I think it sounded like it was a failed project for that firm. But if you have some good ideas and you see people that you think would be a good fit, then let us know. So I always have that in the back of my mind, and you never really know until you get an interview whether they're serious or not. And bizarrely enough, it just happened to be that he was the only individual at the MD level that I actually introduced to them. He was my test case at the senior level. They got a meeting. He was a great guy. He wanted to work in a boutique because you have to be very entrepreneurial to do that. Effectively, you're walking away from, Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley on your business card, which is a big thing.
Mm.
And you're effectively going out there and the client buys you. He was the only person I introduced to them at this level. They liked him. Things moved very quickly, and we made it happen. And actually, at the end of it, he actually asked me in the process, "What's your fee?" Because he's an advisor as well. And I said, "Well, it should be around about 240." And he said, "Well, you deserve every penny of it." Because at the beginning he was a little bit reluctant to engage with me.
Mm-hmm.
And as he said, you were politely persistent. And then when we had a coffee, et cetera, et cetera. So that was the story. But the other positive is before I was kind of focused, again, it's a comfort zone thing, Mark. Before my comfort zone was more the junior level, simply because that's what I do, that's what I know, and I can talk to people about that. But at the senior level, it's easier. There's less competition. And it's less of a waste of time, if that makes sense. Mm. It's much easier to reference people, and you know, you can bet are not being proactive because, frankly, they've probably got enough business on retained to worry about anyway.
That's a good insight.
So the other positive was, you know, the other £60,000, you know, note was, I know how to make big fees now, and I'm working on two other different projects right now, which are fairly similar. One of which we're talking about with one of the top hedge funds in the world. Is not only would we have a fee when the person joins, but we would also have revenue split or a percentage.
Oh, wow.
Percentage of the profit of what they bring in, because they're very open to people coming in with new, exotic, different types of ways of or different systems of investing or trading.
That would be cool.
That would be very cool, Mark. Yeah. That would be very cool. Yeah.
I like it. That's a great idea. So look, I'm about getting the step-by-step so that it's replicatable. So you said you knew the senior partner already.
Yeah.
And how often were you in touch with them? And how did you keep in touch with them in a way that was positive and kept the relationship going without becoming, you know, a pest or becoming repetitive?
I've known him for almost 10 years, actually. So the first time I actually connected with him was 10 years ago, and it was for an MD mandate for a blue chip investment bank. And the mandate was basically to find some of the best managing directors in the marketplace. And this was in the boom years of, you know, 06, basically. Mm, so it's almost 10 years.
Yeah.
And I remember my boss said to me at the time, he said, stay very close to these people, whatever happens, because they are going to be the European heads and the global heads of these banks. And actually, with most of them, I have stayed close. So he was one of those people. And, you know, in the end, he didn't even interview through us for the position. But we got on well. He was a nice guy. So, I don't know, once every 2 or 3 years, mm-hmm. I would just connect with him and have a coffee with him and just see, you know, see how he was. His particular bank was going through some changes, and you know, he eventually left and he joined this new boutique firm probably 2 to 3 years ago. I'd noticed that on the news wires or on LinkedIn or something like that. So I reached out to him. We had a coffee, and you know, the coffee was just generally to see how he was. You know, how was he doing? Just keeping in contact. And he said, you know, they might need some junior positions. So I gave them a few ideas. But I didn't really take it that seriously because they weren't retaining. Plus, I was busy on other things anyway. And then it would have been beginning of this year that we had another coffee again. You know, I just pinged him a mail, said, look, sorry, I was super busy last year, couldn't really focus. And he was fine with that because they know that, you know, our primary model is retained. And if it's not retained, then it's obviously, you know, a secondary consideration for us or second priority. There's no shame in saying that. It is what it is. Mm. So we had a coffee. He said this, you know, he said, you know, there would be certain sectors where we would like managing directors. And then, yeah, I just set aside a little bit of time every day, maybe an hour, just to figure out who the good guys were worth going for, and then connecting with them.
And of course, now you have a whole another generation of managing director level candidates who then themselves could become clients.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Beautiful. I love it. And Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, that wasn't your biggest ever fee, was it? You've had one that was even bigger than that.
Yes. So the biggest one I personally did was 200,000, which was with a private equity firm.
And that's pounds?
£200,000. That was at the company I used to work for, and it was to hire. It was actually to hire two partners.
Okay.
So my boss knew the private equity firm, and he said. And they said, rather, you know, we've had a search firm. They found us a few partners, but they've run out of steam. So you know, the grass has already been trodden on, but what we need is, you know, a German-speaking partner and a Nordic partner. And I'd done a few searches in the Nordic markets, and I'd said, you know, okay, you know, happy to take this on the basis that it's just me that you work with, mm-hmm. and, you know, we'll put some work into it and let's see what we can come up with. So on the German-speaking one, I only introduced one person that happened to come from an off-limit client from the first headhunter.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, exactly. And that was a great placement. And then the second one was based in Sweden. I only introduced two people to them, and he got the job. And obviously at the senior level, it's big money.
And they were 100K a piece then, or so was the total 200K, or was it 200 for each placement?
No, I believe it was 200 each placement.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. Okay, cool. So, Bob, I just wanted to touch on your retained proposition, because you had originally been working primarily in contingency. So what needed to shift in order for you to start winning retainers?
I think just confidence, Mark. Just, you know, just confidence in what you're talking about and the marketing. The marketing is so valuable, because if you only have one opportunity or one job that you're pitching for in a month, then you're not going to have the confidence to be able to say, well, look, it's not really that interesting. You know, it doesn't really work for you, or whatever it is. If you have five pitches in a month, then it comes across that you're, number one, it comes across that you're busy. And number two, you're being genuine. You're like, okay, you know, we can help you this way, or we can help you in a retained way. But, you know, I've got to be honest, this is how the market works. And then I just relay it in their terms, mm-hmm. in their business terms. So if they're bankers, certain deals they will know will happen, you know. So when they're selling a company, they know that's going to happen and they're going to get a fee out of it. When they're buying a business, it may not happen. Client may not come up with the right bid, and there's obviously other bidders in the process. So I just put it in their words and say, look, it's just like, you know, a sell side for you, where you know you're going to get, you know the transaction's going to close. So obviously that's a top priority. So if you can relate into their language or their world.
That's genius, Bob. I like that analogy, because they totally get it right away, and you put it, you know, from their point of view.
Yeah, exactly.
Beautiful. Yeah. Could you just briefly recap on what were the key things that we worked on in relation to, you know, increasing the number of retainers you were winning?
What were the key? How do you mean the key things?
Well, the key things that we specifically worked on, that because I know confidence was a big part of it, but what were the key things that we put in place in order for you to start enjoying a lot of success in that?
I think you asked me to do a SWOT analysis on the business, which was actually very helpful from a background point of view, thinking about obviously clearly the strengths and then thinking about the weaknesses, which then helped me make those weaknesses strengths, if I could, mm-hmm. the opportunities and the threats to the business. I think a huge help was when you asked me to think of to write down the search process. And I remember working on that for a while. And I remember when I sent it over to you, you were like, wow, that's pretty impressive. Because I think we have a 71-step retainer process, which, again, I think people only really see to sign the document. So I should make that a little bit more public, give clients the document or the information. But the very fact that I can just dip into that and say, you know, the research process is four stages, and go in a very detailed way into any part is super helpful. And then, as you say, just the discipline to schedule an hour of my day every day when I'm in the office to make those marketing calls, whether it's an MPC call, whether it's a call to just introduce myself. And your brain is like a laser system, right? Once you think, okay, I have to call people in this hour, if you know, you make the calls and you figure out ways of making it. I remember one marketing call was actually a great, here's a good example of, you know, just getting the calls done. So I spoke to a director at a private equity firm who I've known for years. I've known him for 7 or 8 years. And he has a young child, same age as my kids. My kids are 2 and 3. So we just started talking about that and how great it was. I think we were arranging lunch. And then he said, "Oh, so-and-so's just had a baby." And I said, "Oh, I don't know who that is." He said, "Oh, wow, okay, you know so many people. I thought you would know this guy." And he would say, you should know him. And I was like, "Okay, why?" And he was like, "He's just so charismatic, so funny, full of life. You know, he worked, worked with me as a banker, or he was more senior, worked there, did this, did that." I said, "Wow, okay, great." So put the phone down, and immediately I dialed that guy's number.
Great.
Didn't even know him. And I pretty much, this is exactly what I said. I said, "Hey, Mark, you don't know me, but I've been speaking to Ben. We've known each other for a long time. We've got lots of common connections. Ben basically said that you're a great guy, really charismatic, full of energy, amazing investor. Just thought we should kind of connect and, you know, maybe let's grab a coffee." And he was like, "Yeah, let's do it." So,
Beautiful.
whereas before I would kind of be like, "Oh, this guy doesn't know me, or why would he talk to me, or this or that or the other." I mean, it's you know, the difference is like day and night.
Fantastic. Bob, there's one more thing I wanted to touch on, and thank you so much for this today. It's been hugely interesting and entertaining. You said something to me which really sticks in my mind a few months ago, which is that you had taken a family holiday for the first time in a long time, and you'd won a retainer before you left, and when you came back, your research team had already created the shortlist. You just had to requalify the candidates and then present them to the client. Could you just t describe that a little bit, like what that was like to have money that was, you know, the business was working when you were away with your family?
Yeah, that was an amazing feeling because, I mean, taking on research, I started off as a one-man band, and you're always constantly thinking to yourself, you know, if I stop, then everything stops, right? The
Right.
marketing stops, the research stops. So, having the researchers has been a work in progress. I must admit, I've been lucky with one of them who's tremendous. It's all about finding the right people. And I knew I had the mandate. I was a little bit nervous about leaving, but obviously, you know, you can get email on your phone and whatnot. But I didn't want to spoil the holiday with the family, you know, with the kids and my wife. So I kind of clearly gave out, you know, clear guidelines. As in, you know, we're looking for these type of people, this type of profile, and you know, they're all pretty much on the system. And if they weren't on the system, then you can ask for referrals. So, you know, there's scripts for, you know, the role itself, and if they're not relevant, then the referral. You know, asking for a referral, and gave them a names of quite a few friends, as I call them, you know, people who would be happy to help me out, who are in target companies, right? So people you can call and say, "Hey, you know, I need a hand, and can you tell me who does this and who does that?" And then they go on with it, basically. So every day I got an email update from the guys with the CVs. There was a few, you know, there was a few that maybe weren't as relevant. But as long as the communication is there, and you know, after 1 or 2 days, I've emailed them back and say, you know, this person's not right, that person is, blah, blah, blah. So it was just really a matter of logging in at the end of the day, you know, on my laptop, because I took the laptop with me. It was just logging in at the end of the day for 10 or 15 minutes, looking at the 3 or 4 CVs that had come in and saying, yes, no, this is why, this is not, and just right, shaping it for those guys to really focus on the most relevant people. But yeah, you're very right. It was a really nice feeling. And I remember actually being on holiday. My wife and I were sitting out on the balcony, and I think it was the second or third night. And I was saying, wow, we could live anywhere, basically. We could do this a lot.
Fantastic. Bob, one final question for you then, is what to you is the value of hiring a coach? Because you were already, I mean, you were a very smart guy. You were already successful before we met. So you know, why work with a coach if, you know, you'd probably be successful on your own anyway?
That's exactly the mindset that I had, Mark. That's exactly the mindset that I had before we worked together. Was I know this, I've done it, so why do I need somebody to help me out? Then I started looking into it. The business, quite frankly, was kind of a plateau. I took references on you, and you were very happy to supply them to me. One of those referees happened to be an ex-colleague of mine who I worked with at Huxley, who funnily enough, became the top biller. I think, he was the top biller of the year after I was the top biller, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
He spoke really highly of you. He said, there's no sales pitch, no nothing. You really do care. And, you know, I think the benefit of having a coach is bouncing ideas off someone. You clearly see a much bigger aspect or population of the marketplace and techniques, what works, what doesn't work, than me in my, you know, even though I've got, you know, almost 18 years, I've only really worked at three firms, right? So there was Huxley, then there was Norman Broadbent, and then Redgrave Partners. So the benefit is someone to bounce ideas off. The benefit is someone to stillize thoughts. Some of the questions you asked me and clearly guided me in the right direction. I mean, it's as Nick said, who you've also Nick Barrow, he said, you know, the best investment you can make is an investment in yourself. And it clearly worked. And it clearly works as well, as long as you do it. As long as you do it, right? I mean, even the best athletes in the world have a coach, right? So why shouldn't I?
Well put. Well, listen, Bob, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed catching up with you again today. And you know, let's keep in touch. Maybe in the new year we can chat again. But or if you need me in the meantime, just give me a shout. But look forward to reconnecting with you soon.
Yep, we definitely will reconnect. Thanks, Mark.
All right, Bob. Have a great day.
Okay. Cheers.
Thanks. Bye now.
If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more, please visit recruitmentcoach.com.